Page 417. Because Hegel does not recognize and assert the specific historical tendency which find expression in his own work, but presents himself as an absolute mind in philosophizing and accordingly preserves an ostensibly distance and impartiality, many parts of his work lack clarity, and in spite of the revolutionary sharpness and flexibility of the method, take on the arbitrary and pedantic character which was so closely bound up with the political condition of his time. In the idealistic thought to which he owes the existence, the dialectic is beset by dogmatism. Since the abstractions at which the method arrives are supposed to the moments in a system in which thought no longer needs to go beyond itself, the relationship comprehended by it also are regarded as unalterable and eternal. If a great deal may happen in history yet to come, even if other peoples, for example, the Slavs, footnote 13, text, should take over leadership from those nations which have in the past been decisive, nevertheless, no new principle of social organizations will become dominant and not decisive. Changes will take place in the organization of mankind. No historical change which brought about a new form of human association could leave the concepts of society, freedom, right, and so on, unaltered. The interconnection of all categories, even the most abstract, would be affected thereby. Hence, Hegel's belief that this thought comprehended the essential characteristics of all being, the unity of which remained as it appeared in the system, a complete hierarchy and totality undisturbed by the becoming and passing of individuals, represented the conceptual eternalization of the earthly relationship on which it was based. The dialectic takes on a transfiguring function, the law of life in which, according to Hegel, domination and servitude, as well as poverty and misery, have their eternal place, are sanctioned by the fact that the conceptual interconnection in which they are included is regarded as something higher, divine, and absolute, just as religion and deification of a race or state or the worship of nature offer the suffering individual an immortal and eternal essence. So Hegel believes he has revealed an eternal meaning in the contemplation of which the individual should feel sheltered from all personal misery. This is the dogmatic, metaphysical, naive aspect of his theory. Its relativism is directly bound up with this. The dogmatic assertion that all the particular views which ever have entered the list against one another in real historical combat, all the creeds of particular groups, all attempts at reform are now transcended and cancelled out. The notion of the all-embracing thought which is to apportion its partial rightness and final limitation to every point of view without consciously taking sides with any one against the other and deciding between them. This is the very soul of bourgeois relativism. Page 418. The attempt to afford justification to every idea in every historical person and to assign the heroes of past revolutions their place in the pantheon of history next to the victorious generals of the counter-revolution, this ostensibly free-floating objectivity conditioned by the bourgeoisies stands on two fronts against absolutist restoration and against the proletariat. Has acquired validity in the Hegelian system along with the idealistic pathos of absolute knowledge. It is self-evident that tolerance taught all views that are in the past and recognized as conditioned is no less relativist than negativist skepticism. The more the times demand unsparing outspokenness and defense of particular truth and rights, the more unequivocally it reveals the inhumanity imminent in it. If, in spite of the lack of conscious relationship between the philosophy and any particular practice principle, Hegel was guided in detail not simply by the conservative Prussian spirit, but also by interests pushing him toward his dogmatism, nevertheless prevented his recognizing and defending these tendencies, which found expression in his science as his own purposes and progressive interests. He seemed to speak of himself when he describes how the consciousness lets the idea of something good in itself, which as yet has no reality, go by like an empty cloak. Footnote 14, text. In Hegel, as in Goethe, the progressive impulses enter secretly into the viewpoint, which ostensibly comprehends and harmonizes everything real impartially. Later, relativism, in contrast, directs his demonstration of limiting conditionally mainly against the progressive ideas themselves, which it thereby seeks to flatten, that is, to equate with everything already past. In his conceptual projections, the new as well as the old easily appear as simply rationalizing and ideology, since the recognition of the truth of particular ideas disappear behind the display of conditions, the coordination with historical unities. This impartial relativism reveals itself as the friend of what exists at any given time. The dogmatism concealed within it is the affirmation of the existing power that is coming into being, needs conscious decision in its struggle, while the limitations to mere understanding and contemplation serves what is already in existence. That impartial partisanship and indiscriminate objectivity represents a subjective viewpoint, is a dialectical proposition that indeed takes relativism beyond itself. In materialism, the dialectic is not regarded as a closed system. Understanding that the prevalent circumstances are conditioned and transitory is not here immediately equated with transcending them and cancelling them out. Page 419. Hegel declares, something is only known, indeed felt, as a limit, a defect, only when one is already beyond it. It is simply lack of consciousness not to see that precisely this description of something as finite or limited contains proof of the real presence of the infinite and unlimited. That knowledge of boundaries is only possible insofar as the unbounded is here in one consciousness. Footnote 15, text. This view has as its presupposition the basic postulate of idealism, that concept and being are in truth the same, and therefore all fulfillment can take place in the pure medium of the spirit. Inner renewal and exaltation, reformation and spiritual elevation were always the solution to which he pointed. Insofar as dealing with and changing the external world are regarded as all fundamental, it appeared as a mere consequence of this. Materialism, on the other hand, insists that objective reality is not identical with man's thought and can never be merged into it. As much as thought in its own element seeks to copy the life of the object and adapt itself to it, the thought is nevertheless never simultaneously the object thought about unless in self-observation and reflection, and not even there. To conceptualize a defect is therefore not to transcend it. Concepts and theories form an impulse to its removal, a prerequisite to the proper procedure, which, as it progresses, is constantly redefined, adapted, and improved. An isolated and conclusive theory of reality is completely unthinkable. If one takes seriously the formal definition of truth, which runs through the whole history of logic as the correspondence of cognition with its object, footnote 16, text, there follows from it the contradiction to the dogmatic interpretation of thought. This correspondence is neither a simple datum, an immediate fact, as it appears in the doctrine of intuitive immediate certainty and in mysticism, nor does it take place in the pure sphere of spiritual immanence, as it seems to in Hegel's metaphysical legend. Rather, it is always established by real events, by human activity, in the investigation and determination of actual conditions, and even more in the verification of theories. The direction of attention, the refinement of methods, the categorical structure of subject matter, in short, human activity within the framework of the given social period play their role. The discussion here will not deal with the question of how far all connections with such activity is avoided by Husserl's formal ontology, which refers to any possible world in empty generality, footnote 17, text, or by formal apophantic, which likewise relates to all possible statements in empty generality, or by other parts of pure logic and mathematics, nor which how far they possess real cognitive value without regard to such a connection. Page 420. If certain philosophical interpretation of mathematics correctly stress it as a priori character, that is, the independence of mathematical constructions from an empirical observation, the mathematical models of theoretical physics in which the cognitive value of mathematics finally shows itself are, in any case, structured with reference to the events that can be brought about and verified on the basis of the current level of development of the technical apparatus. As little as mathematics needs to trouble itself about this relationship in its deduction, its form at any given time is nevertheless as much conditioned by the increase in the technical capacity of mankind as the latter is by the development of mathematics. The verification and proof of ideas relating to man and society, however, consists not merely in laboratory experiments or the examination of documents, but in historical struggles in which conviction itself plays an essential role. The false view that the present social order is essentially harmonious serves as an impetus to the renewal of disharmony and decline and become a factor in its own practical refutation. The correct theory of the prevalent conditions, the doctrine of the deepening of crises and the approach of catastrophes does, to be sure, find continuous confirmation in all particulars. But the picture of a better world that inheres in this theory and takes its departure from the assertion of the badness of the present, the idea of men and their capabilities imminent in it, finds its definition, correction, conviction and confirmation in the course of historical struggles. Hence, activity is not to be regarded as an appendix, as merely what comes after thought, but enters into theory at every point and is inseparable from it. Just for this reason, pure thought does not here give the satisfaction of having sure and certain grasps of the questions and being at one with it. It is certainly impossible to speak too highly of the conquest of the human spirit as a factor.